Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Telling Everybody Everything. We are back from Mauritius. If you listened to last week's episode, you'll know that we took our very Celtic white-skinned family on a tropical holiday to where we don't belong. And I advertised an episode that's behind a paywall for a charity, and that's called Mindful Mixtape. It's an Acast initiative. I made an episode called Falling Down the Stairs about when I fell down the stairs, and then loads of people have been in touch to be like, how do I listen to this episode? I don't think the episode is available yet. And I forget that people don't work as quickly as I do. I record the podcast, I edit the podcast, well, barely, and then I publish the podcast right away. And I guess bigger, more professional organizations like to receive your audio and receive everyone's audio by a deadline, and then they release it all at once. So if you search Acast Mindful Mixtape, I think they should be releasing all these bonus episodes soon, and it would be wonderful if you could listen and make a contribution. I didn't want to slag off Mauritius or the resort, because everyone there is nothing but lovely. They tell you in the taxi when you arrive, Mauritians, I think that's what they're called, Mauritius citizens of Mauritius, do not fight. They're always happy. There's no crime there. It's just a wonderful place. And the hotel that we stayed at is a chain of a hotel we've stayed at before. It's called the One and Only. We stayed there politically controversially in Dubai, and then also we loved it so much we decided, oh, we'll stay at the One and Only in Mauritius as well. It was pretty much empty, so you have lots of privacy, and the food was great. The staff were so nice, but for us, like, too nice. I don't want a butler in my face 24/7 knocking on the door, I mean, asking me how I'm recovering from my fall downstairs, giving me gifts. They were so nice, but I don't know how to describe it. I just felt like there was a lot of pressure with how often I was seeing them, how nice they were being. I didn't want any gifts. Like, I have too much stuff as it is. And when you pack the maximum stuff that can fit in your bags when you have two small children. So I just felt like I could have done a little bit less of that. But also, they were being really apologetic because there was all this construction going on the beach. Bobby pointed out any other family really would have flipped their lid because you pay so much to stay there. I mean, you pay an arm and a leg to stay there. It is a luxury holiday for sure. And I like to treat my family to that every once in a while. But I mean, Fred and I, we have to put an end to the tropics. The tropics are not for me. You will not see me back there. And it's a shame because I've never visited Thailand or Vietnam. I really wanted to go to Sri Lanka. Like, there are places that I would like to see. And I know that not all those places are included in the tropics, but like, you know, the Indian Ocean, that whole part of the world is no place for TV's Catherine Ryan or Fred Ryan Kutstra. We do not belong there. We each got like 45 mosquito bites. Fred refused to go in the swimming pool at all once, so he's just roasting in the shade, obviously, but just roasting, being like, why have my parents got me in a sand pit? Like, he plays with the sand at the park, he gets his shovels out, but he wears his boots, and he doesn't like it if he gets dirty. So he was absolutely not about to be taking his shoes off and running through hot beach sand. He had no interest in the sea. Fred and I were just, every day he would look at me and go, home, and I felt so guilty because I also wanted to go home. And Bobby would say, "Are you girls, are you having a nice time? Are you having?" And I was like, yeah, but in truth, no, I was not having a nice time. I was with two small children on a fucking tropical island in the middle of the Indian Ocean. That's not a place for a Celtic person. British people don't even seem to understand. Like, I see you guys baking in the sun on these Turkish holidays. I see you in Spain. Like, we don't belong there. Part of you paying for your ancestors all having sex with their cousins and remaining on one island and being inbred is that, like, evolutionarily, we cannot survive in these climates. We're not built for it. Stop trying. Do you know? I'll be 40 this year. And when I was younger, I used to have skin-colored hair and hair-colored skin. People have asked me, what do you mean by that, Catherine? Well, I would dye my body like a brown orange, and I would dye my hair like a blue-white. When reality, my hair was supposed to be brown orange and my body is blue light, like blue white, like see-through Smurf. You should see my tits right now. Breastfeeding, I have absolute avatar, straight blue, translucent jellyfish tits. And someone like me needs to stay in the rain. Fred is the same. Fenna, the jury's out. She's a newborn. Obviously, we didn't have her tanning. And Violet can tan. Bobby obviously gets a great tan. But I don't want him tanning anymore. I have told him, you need to wear SPF on your face every day. And he doesn't understand what that means. He's like, what do you mean every day? I said, every day for the rest of your life. And he was talking about getting a tan on his face. And I said, no, not now with the skin treatments I'm giving you, with the retinol creams and the moisturizers, like, we're turning back the clock now, Bobby, and you're never getting a tan on your face ever again in your life. So I'm done with the tropics. It's a shame, but I am done. I am never going there again. I'm never taking my children there again. Oh, kids, you want to go on a holiday? Pack your bags for Belfast. We're going to have an awesome time. The flights were horrific, though I'm sure they could have been worse. We always remember things as better than they were. But on the way back, it was the same old story with Fred. Like, he was so excited to be on a plane and he wouldn't fall asleep. And Bobby's drinking whiskey, so those two boys are fighting like stepbrothers. Bobby did really well with Fred, and to his credit, Fenna is the easier baby, but you just have to exercise vigilance throughout the entire flight. There's no relaxing on that flight. And Fred just wanted to go home, sleep in his bed. He's so adorable right now. His language has exploded and he's saying all kinds of words that he wasn't saying before, sentences, he's singing, he knows a lot of songs now. It's really cute. And he is developmentally different to Violet at that age, but they do say she's a little girl, he's a little boy. I know we're not supposed to see gender as binary these days, but with toddlers, you just do. And so they're different, but Fred's really coming along. I think for a little boy, he's quite smart. Violet left before we did, and that broke my heart, but it needed to be done. She had a ski trip with her class, and she also had a dance recital with her school, and I appreciate that she honors those commitments, and she needed to get back for those. She left with the babysitter, and I missed her very much. I hated the idea of Violet being that far away from me. I hate the idea of distance between me and my children. Obviously, you hate having your child in the sky on a flight while you are grounded on an island. It boggles my mind, the number of things that could go wrong. Where is she? Is she safe? Is she okay? Is she happy? Has she landed? She landed with the babysitter. She went to school and did her dance recitals, knocked it out of the park. Bobby and I went to her dance recital. When we landed, we brought Fenna with us after she'd just come off a flight. And the little girl was captivated by the dancing. She's genuinely the best baby ever. She sat there on my lap facing out and just watched the show. Loved it. She was a very appreciative audience. And people aren't used to looking out into the stage, looking out into the seats and seeing a newborn, like, smiling along with the music. So I hope that they appreciated having little Miss Fenna Grace in the audience. And I hope they also appreciated not having Fred in the audience, because that boy was so happy to get back to his own house and his own bed. I think going on holiday, if anything, if, you know, I can't see it as just a complete waste of time and money. So I will say, on a positive note, it has given Fred and me a greater appreciation for our home life. He and I were both like, oh my God, home. We're both so happy to be in our own beds, so happy to be in our element. He's in his playroom just like, yes, I'm home. So I suppose take him on a luxury holiday once a year, just to remind him of how hard life can be outside of the comfort of his own home. Also, I think that we are going to be returned a Violet that is humbly grateful for her own life. Violet's a teenager. She's one of the best teenagers that I have ever experienced. When I was a teenage girl, I could be a little shit, to say the least, though not at 13. At 13, I was still really, really good and respectful and academic, and I followed all the rules. I'm still someone who likes to follow the rules. But girls this age, I guess every generation, they're older, younger. Do you know? They are weaponized with social media. They are influenced by social media. They feel like they should be doing this and they should be doing that. And she's gone on a ski trip with her school. This is 80 young women. I don't know how the teachers do it. I say to them all the time, you are like Tiger King, just keeping all these wild animals from crying or being sick or getting in fights or sneaking out. And Violet doesn't understand why she can't leave her hotel room and go to the hotel room of one of her girlfriends in the middle of the night. And I say, well, yeah, they have to keep tabs on you. Like, you can't disappear in a foreign country and who knows where you're going. They don't know that you're just having a laugh going into your friend's room. They have to treat it very regimented. And Violet goes, well, it's like a prison because I'm not allowed to do this and I'm not allowed to have sushi and I'm not allowed to go to this restaurant. I'm not allowed to go here. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to be one of a group and you're going to have to follow rules. And those rules are in place, first and foremost, to keep you safe and also to keep you healthy and well and to protect all of you. And if I was a chaperone on a ski holiday with 80 girls, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do. And she's having a hard time with it because she's used to me really bending over backwards to give her whatever she wants, whenever she wants. And there have been a few incidents, not major incidents, but basically Violet's behaving like she's at Fyre Festival. If you don't know Fyre Festival, it was the very ill-fated affair organized by some guy on a quad bike and Ja Rule, I think, and then promoted by Kylie Jenner and a bunch of models. Kendall Jenner, maybe. Just look up Fyre Festival, Fyre with a Y. Of course, my listeners mostly know what this is, but if you don't, there's a great documentary about it on Netflix where everything went wrong. There was sewage, the tents were blowing away, there was no food. It was just an absolute disaster. And the whole world was laughing watching this unfold on social media because all the attendees were really rich Nepo babies. And I suppose we like to see them fall on their ass. Violet really has taken on the persona of one of these Nepo babies on the trip. She's sending us photos of food, being like, I cannot be expected to eat salmon pasta. You need to fly me in some food. I'm going to Switzerland. Like, she's got all these plans to make her situation better. And Bobby said, no, like, leave it. Don't help her. Let her experience this for herself. And we wanted her to have an amazing time on this trip, but I think we also were anticipating that she might have some challenges on this trip. And that's all very much part of becoming a young woman and growing up. It's like a little taste of university experience, maybe. And I learned something about myself through Violet's Fyre Festival hostage videos that she keeps sending us from what is meant to be an amazing ski trip. Bobby said, you know what you are? You're the devouring mother. And I said, I don't like the sound of that. What do you mean by devouring? Why are you telling me I'm something with the word devouring as I'm devouring like mini sausages dipped in tzatziki because I eat dinner like 5 times a day because I'm breastfeeding? I eat dinner probably 5 times before 2 p.m. and then I kind of don't eat that much at night. I'll have like a little bit of ice cream or popcorn, maybe a glass of wine, but all morning I'm like ravenous. I'm like, what do you mean devouring? And he goes, well, there's a Freudian devouring. And then it's also in Greek mythology, devouring mother. But then Jordan Peterson, Bobby's favorite, also has a definition of the devouring mother. And you can look it up. Well, I mean, I'll talk about it right now. Why should you look it up? Oh, it's a book as well. Okay, in Greek mythology, the devouring mother is called Lamia. She snatches up children and infants. She kidnaps them from new mothers and takes them to her lair. There, she would devour them. Lamia is so stricken with grief and rage that she tries to rob every woman of their children. So this is the Greek mythological devouring mother. That's where it comes from, but that's not me. It has since taken on different incarnations. What's the Freudian one? The devouring mother, and this is the Freudian explanation, is codependent and quote-unquote consumes her children, particularly her sons, emotionally and psychologically. She seeks fulfillment through her children because the feminine mystique has convinced her that her identity is inseparable from her role as wife and mother. Again, I don't think that this is me because, I mean, I'm very, very liberal and I have my own life and my own achievements and my own career, and I'm never living vicariously through my kids or trying to control them. Quite the opposite. Like, I really encourage Violet anyway to be whomever she wants to be, and I don't think that one fits me either. But the Jordan Peterson explanation of devouring mother, it's the pathological version of motherhood. Since this mother devours her children's potential along with her own fulfillment, Peterson typically focuses this analysis on the danger of overprotection in our parenting, wherein we protect our children out of their own competence. I might have done some of that. I might be this definition of the devouring mother. I think Violet's very competent, but I certainly give her and have always given her everything she wants, whenever she wants. I don't feel that I've ever had a reason to discipline her because my only rule in the house really is we don't talk to each other like shit. Like, we respect each other and we're good and we're kind and we tell the truth. And then if Violet wants something, I just buy it for her. Or if she wants to go somewhere, I take her there. Or if she wants to do something, we do it. Like, I give her lots of attention and we talk all the time and I love her and I didn't think that that would be a problem. At times, I think I've almost done it on purpose because I feel like if I show Violet the best of festivals and we go backstage and we have VIP and we have these lovely tents, then I don't think she'll want to go to festivals. Like, I see a lot of young people getting in trouble at festivals and taking drugs, and I don't think she'll want to stay in those tents and live in like filth. I think she'll go, oh, I don't want to come, and then she'll be home with me. And then I take her on luxury holidays because I don't want her impressed by someone's dusty son who's like, let's go do this today. Like, I want her standards to be high. And I always want her to be like, oh, do you know what? I've already done this a really fun way with my mom. And my mom, yeah, I am the devouring mother, I think. I've created like an unsustainable, normal life for Violet. And I think that I need to, as she gets older, you know, because she says to me, I want to have my own bank account and I want to have a bank card and an allowance. And I go, no, you just have this unlimited credit card. Why do you need your own money? Oh, no. All right. So I think I'm a really good mom to babies and toddlers. But as Violet transitions into like young womanhood, I'm very glad to have Bobby around. I think he's like grounding and humbling. And I think he's good with teenagers, like in a cool dad kind of way. He's brought athletics into her life and he like deals with her with a different energy, which I think is always good to have different types of caregivers. But I really think I need to look at now how to help her have the skills to survive in the wild by herself. Because this is quite a nice trip, really. It's a nice ski trip. And I think she's like, well, no one's taken me to Nobu since I got here. So like, what's up? I think she's having fun in between her messages to me, like SOS messages asking for sushi. I think she is having fun, but yeah, she's right. And she has been asking for this. So I'm going to give her own bank account, allowance. Maybe more trips like this are needed, just because what is she going to do if she goes away from me, she goes to university or moves out in her own flat and she'll be like, well, what day does the cleaner come? And I'll be like, no, that was only going on at my house. Well, how come I haven't got an ensuite? Well, that was only going on at my house. And that is after years and years of grafting. I thought she would remember being young and living in a studio flat and like really just making ends meet. But of course, she doesn't remember that because she always had everything. Even when I had very little, I made sure that Violet thought she was a sultan. And so this is something I've learned. We got to watch out. We got to make sure that we do not become the devouring mother. Your purpose as your child's mother is to baby them when they're babies. And I think wear them and feed them and respond to their needs immediately. But then, Oh, and it's hard for me too because I'm a mother to babies right now and a mother to a teenager. And I want to respond to everyone's needs. But I think that I need to create better boundaries and be like, okay, you have basic needs, but then all these other wants are not needs and you need to like earn them and chill out and experience life for yourself. Because I loved that time in my life. I loved rocking around Toronto all by myself, living by myself at 19, being a bit poor, though not for long because I started working at Hooters and then I was rich. But figuring it out, you know, I worked at this nightclub where I went for the interview and the owner or the manager was like this big black man with lots of tattoos and piercings and he had a Rolex watch and he had a really flashy suit. And I was like, hi, I would like to be a bartender here, please. And he was like, okay, farm girl. Which I don't know why he called me that. I was wearing a lovely outfit. It wasn't like a clubbing outfit. It was kind of like a very A-line skirt. Sound of Music girl would have maybe been a more apt description of what I looked like that day. Maria. And he said, do you know how to make this cocktail? Do you know how to make that cocktail? And I did. And I made cocktails for him and I showed him that I knew how. And he was like, all right, I'm going to give you a chance. And I was like, great. Because all I cared about when I moved to Toronto was filling 24 hours a day with work. I wanted to go to school in the day. I wanted to work at a restaurant. And then this was an after-hours club. I wanted to work there. I was like, I'm going to be killing it in Toronto. And I learned that an after-hours place, you don't even make cocktails. You give people water and watch them dance on drugs. And that was quite an eye-opening experience for me. Like, I had some tricky moments that I had to navigate and figure out. And I want Violet to have those moments because those moments were amazing. I bought a car in Ottawa, which was 5 hours from Toronto. I found it all by myself on Auto Trader. And my parents were like, this is a bad idea. You live in Toronto. You don't need a car. And I said, well, my boyfriend's in Sarnia. I need to come back and forth. La, la, la. I didn't listen to them. And I chose the car myself. And I took the train. And like Ontario train is not efficient, like a British train. I took the train to Ottawa. And it was in this little village near Ottawa called like Apple Tree or Apple City. I went there and the family who were selling the car picked me up at the train station and I went to their house to get the car and it wouldn't start. And it was a dad and a mom and like two young kids and the dad fixed cars and he was like, oh, it needs this. It needs a fan belt. It needs this other thing, but I can't get it till tomorrow because it was late Sunday night. And I had to sleep over at this family's house, like sleep on their couch. And I cried. And I didn't have extra money at that point. Like I couldn't, I don't know, like now I guess I would just like get a car, get a helicopter. But back then I was like, oh my God, I'm stuck. Like I spent all my money on this car. And I was scared and I cried and I slept on their couch and the mom brought me McDonald's. And then in the morning it was okay and the car was fixed and I drove it back to Toronto and then I had my new car and it was an adventure. And it was an adventure that scared me at times. But it was cool. And then I had a boyfriend who lived in New York and I used to take the Greyhound bus through like upstate New York for 8 hours to get there and see him. And that was scary sometimes. Sometimes we had to change buses and I'd be in a different country, albeit like only America, but still like Rochester, New York is not a safe place for a 19-year-old girl, any 19-year-old girl. And sometimes I would be stranded there waiting for them to repair the bus or get a new bus. And I was always doing it with like a very little amount of emergency cash in case anything went wrong. And I loved those experiences. I think I loved them at the time. I loved the struggle always, like almost immediately after. So I need to give my teenager the gift of struggle just a little bit. And Violet, if you're listening, which sometimes she does listen, and I have her permission to talk about certain things, I'm very proud of how she's been handling the ski trip. And Bobby and I do not mean to laugh at her hostage videos that she sends me. I think we'll all look back and laugh. I think this is just an incredible trip for her, an incredible trip. And so the next time I take my family on a holiday, maybe we need to, you know, have some adventures. We don't need a butler. We don't need a luxury holiday in a place where we're going to get sunburns and mosquito bites. Like we need a humble, you know, remember who we are, Sarnia, down home family adventure. Maybe go like camping in Canada or something. Because that is how you make memories. That's how memories are made, guys. That's what I've learned this week. I had the great honor of supporting my friend Michelle DeSwart on the last day of her scheduled tour for her brand new show, Moved. I should have advertised this sooner. You can't see it now. And she hasn't filmed it, which I feel is a shame. I hope that Michelle speaks to a streamer with her agent and gets a date and books, you know, a recording of the show, because everyone deserves to see it. It's so fun and so funny. You will know Michelle DeSwart from The Duchess if you saw that. She played my best friend Bev in the Netflix series. She's a stand-up. She was on tour with me for a little while last year, and she also stars in HBO The Baby. If you haven't seen that, it's like a dark, dark comedy about motherhood, and it's great. And then, I mean, she's got a whole list of projects coming up. And, you know, I think she and I should do something together, if I'm honest. Why haven't I thought of that before? Like, we could be the female Robin Ramesh and go and do things, because we're so different, but we're also very similar. Michelle is into the celebrity gossip just like I am. We worked together for the first time on an ill-fated Channel 4 series called The Dirty Digest 12 years ago. And that got canceled like in the middle of the series run. It was actually really, really spicy, controversial. I don't know exactly what happened. I think that some executive producer fired someone else without asking permission from the channel. And the channel was like, well, guess what? Your show's pulled. That is like the long story short that I got. But The Dirty Digest was awesome. So if you can find any of it online, please send it to me. We did little skits. Do you know, we did this skit where I was throwing a birthday party for Kim Kardashian. And this was 12 years ago, when most people in the UK did not know or care for the Kardashians. And they let me set this up. It was like a real old man boozer pub. And I was in there decorating for Kim K's birthday, and I invited her. So I went on the redpages.com, which is a company I used to work for, Celebrity Contacts News and Events. And I got Kim Kardashian's manager's phone number from there. And the manager, of course, was her mom. And I rang the number, and a woman answered, said, hello. And I said, hi, is Kim Kardashian there? And I think she could tell that I was taking the piss or being filmed or whatever. I don't know what, but this number hung up on me immediately. But I really think that I got a hello from either Kris Jenner or her assistant. And I should have been more prepared. I didn't think anyone was going to answer the phone. Or maybe I got past hello and actually invited her to the party. I'm not sure. I invited her to the party. Yes, I remember now. I said, hello, we're having this party for Kim at, you know, the Old Horse Pub in like Milton Keynes. And then I was hung up on. Yes, that's what happened. I at least got the invite out. And then I was asking punters at the pub, like, oh, are you excited? Do you think Kim's coming? I was dancing on tables, and all these old men were like, huh? Like, we got to do such fun things on The Dirty Digest. And Michelle was the host. So she would come out always in an amazing outfit with her long, long, long model legs and do the monologue that is my favorite thing in late night TV. I love that standing monologue, and then you sit down and you have guests or you do whatever, you have sketches. I don't know, but the studio element of the stand and deliver monologue is a dying art. You see it at the Golden Globes and the BAFTAs and the Oscars, like a host standing there doing kind of a roast. But I grew up on those shows, like Leno and David Letterman, and I loved watching Johnny Carson, and even Joan Rivers did it for a while, where they stand, talk about the news. That is how I used to receive all my news. So I am very excited to let you know that my great friend, Joe Lycett, does have a late night show premiering on Channel 4 this Friday, March 31st. It's called Late with Lycett. Is that what it's called? Late Night Lycett. It's called Late Night Lycett. And I, along with Joanna Lumley and Allison Hammond, am one of the very first guests this Friday. So I'm so excited. It is live. Joe is an absolute wild card. You never know what he's going to do live. So please tune in. I'm just so excited. I'm going up to Birmingham for it. And I'm so proud of my friend. And I think that just like all of his other shows, Joe Lycett's Got Your Back and everything he's done, it's just going to be groundbreaking and unique, and it's going to go on and on and on for years. I'm very, very proud of him. And I did another gig this week. I've been getting out of the house a lot. I got to interview my good friend Dolly Alderton about her new book. Well, that's not her new book. She has another book that's available for pre-order now. I think it's called New Material. Hi, Fenna. Fenna's awake. Let's see if she wants to have some milk. Everything I do in my life, I do it holding a baby. I don't know if people appreciate that. I think a lot of you do, but men don't. Never in my life have I seen a fucking podcasting man with a papoose. But maybe there are some. Maybe there are some. Maybe I could give Fenna to a babysitter and be more professional. No, I can't, because I am the devouring mother. Dolly Alderton did a live series of shows for her second really hit book called Dear Dolly. Her first one is Everything I Know About Love, which is adapted into a BBC series. And I think that's coming back, though officially, I don't know. And then her second book, Dear Dolly, is a collection of her letters that she does as an agony aunt at the Sunday Times. And it's just so full of like great insights and advice. And I'm sure you already know who Dolly is, but we were at the Coliseum in London, which is such a beautiful venue. And I got to interview her, ask about the book, and get some questions from the audience. So that was fun. That was wild. Bobby came with me, and then we saw my very good friend Jimmy Carr for a drink afterwards, who is back from a huge worldwide tour. He's about to go on the road again, obviously. He's in Canada. He's in America. So if you're listening from abroad, get tickets to those shows. You will see Joanne at his Kelowna show, and you will see Carrie at his Toronto show. And why am I not doing a tour like this? I've got to write a new show. And I'm in the process of doing that now. I got a lot of ideas. Bobby and I mean, mostly it's me dunking on him having a 5-hour hobby, and that's golf. And it just hurts my feelings that he'd rather amble around in a hostile climate, getting RSV in the freezing rain, than spend time with me and the girls and Fred. Hi, Fenna. Yes, she is awake now. So it's been a really big week, a really fun week, and Violet got braces. Like, what a week in the Ryan Koonstra household. And we are now 2 weeks away from Bobby's big 40th birthday in Canada. So a lot's going on, a lot's kicking off. And you've been asking me lately to talk more about celebrity news, and to be quite honest with you, I'm just out of the loop. I have seen some crazy things going on. So just as a brief celebrity roundup, Kanye West has announced, and I hate to even focus too much on the musings of Kanye West, because we can see that he's not well. But apparently he has watched the film 21 Jump Street, starring Jonah Hill as a teenage police officer. And because of that film, he thought it was funny, and now he says he's not anti-Semitic anymore. I think news like that can only be celebrated. So that's great. So many of you have written in about Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon, as you know, has fathered like 12 children with 9 or 10 women, and he's always looking for new candidates. But apparently, unless it's a prank, he is officially now looking for new candidates. They have given Nick Cannon a reality show where you get to compete to be his future baby's mother. I mean, if that's not progressive, I don't know what is. These women all seem to be friends with each other. They don't mind. It kind of reminds me of Flavor of Love. If you guys don't know Flava Flav, you have to find online this reality show that he did to find a girlfriend, Flavor of Love. And one girl actually shit herself at the elimination, like pooed on the floor. And I know that it's called an elimination, which is pretty redundant, but it was awesome. It was one of my favorite shows ever. And the third thing that's been huge in celebrity news, and everyone's asking me to cover it, and I need to really do a deep dive this week and find out what is going on. Blac Chyna, a.k.a. Angela White, a.k.a. Rob Kardashian's baby's mother, is a.k.a. Tyga's baby's mother, Tyga, who used to date Kylie. I mean, they weave an incestuous web, these Kardashians. There's a woman on TikTok who's done a full, like, family tree, because now Avril Lavigne is dating Tyga, and Avril Lavigne used to be in a very serious relationship with Brody Jenner, who is the half-brother of Kylie and Kendall Jenner. I mean, I don't know why these people, it's like a high school, like date outside your neighborhood. But anyway, Blac Chyna makes millions from her OnlyFans. She is, I don't know what I would call her. She's like a provocateur, an entertainer. She dances, she has businesses. She's known for having like a crazy hot body, great big boobs, big bum, really beautiful face, but she's problematic. Like, she sued Kim and Chris and Kylie and Chloe and Courtney, I think, but not Kendall, weirdly. Anyway, she lost. Her relationship with Rob was weird, and it really seemed like it was her intention to solidify her financial position by having a baby with him. But I mean, I don't know, that's hearsay. She seems to have some issues for a while. But now, Black China is having all her plastic surgery reversed. She's had her fillers dissolved. Oh, well done, Fena. She's had her big bum dissolved. And she's had her demonic tattoos removed. She's wearing her natural hair now. She's been baptized. It's like Black China is going the other way and totally rebranding herself, embracing her like given name, Angela White. And she shut down her OnlyFans that made her millions before. Black China, give me the password. I will take it over. We're going to have brand new OnlyFans. Like, I don't know why I didn't get on the ground floor of OnlyFans. I'm a hustler. I don't judge. I'm not too good to get on OnlyFans, Fena. Would anyone subscribe? I mean, I don't know what kind of content would be on. Probably this. Probably exactly this. So, no. But good for her. No time like the present for a rebrand. And she seems to be doing very well. And what I love most about it is Black China is so transparently taking us along with her for this ride. She is doing stories on social media, like these long, almost boring videos where she's like, here I go to get my lips dissolved. Oh, and this is happening now, and this is how it's going to progress, and here I go to get laser. But if you feel like watching something at night, I mean, it is a soothing practice. And this woman's transformation is really quite amazing to me. And Bobby called it early on. Bobby said, all these fake bums, all this plastic surgery, it's going to go back the other way. You just wait and see. But who knew it would start with Black China? So if you have a surgery booked to get a fake ass anytime soon, my advice would be cancel it because it was a fad. Your body should never be a trend, by the way. My boobs are also out of fashion. Like, who has fake boobs anymore? No one. Cancel your bum surgery. There's another girl on social media, Nasty Naz. She's this like Ukrainian girl who's really great at twerking. She's like the best twerker, and she teaches twerking classes in Miami and everything else. She has an incredible body. She's like so sexy. She has underwear and like booty short garments, business. She's a real entrepreneur. But she did a prank on her husband, pretended to surprise him after a flight with a boob job. She's like, look, I got boob job. And she had, luckily, those like silicone fake breasts that drag queens wear. And I was so relieved because when I saw, I surprised my husband with a boob job. I don't even know this girl. And it honestly broke my heart. I was like, why? Why would that girl with that perfect body go and get breast implants in 2023? But luckily, it was just a prank. It's going the other way, people. It's all going the other way. I'm not doing filler anymore. I just don't think it looks good after your 40s. I think it can be quite masculine, changes the shape of your face. I will still do Botox, and I'm just doing like prevention and treatment. Like I've explored a few new lasers, and I don't know. I don't really believe in lasers. I do believe in LED therapy. I do believe in like vitamin A, retinols. I believe in vitamin C. I believe in moisturizing. And you know what? I do believe in lasers for certain things, like pigmentation. But my one gripe is just that my jawline is going south. And I don't think that there's a Medispa treatment for that. But I could be wrong. I could be proven wrong. So that's what I'm doing now. Just like Medispa stuff, no more filler, though. I'm taking the Black China road. And one day I will get my implants out, though that's not today, because I'm still breastfeeding. But isn't it interesting? So if you thought of getting these things and you didn't, the trend is over. You made it. And you didn't have to have a general anesthetic after all. Having said that, do what you want to do. All right, some words now from our sponsors. And when we come back, I will open the emails and give you all the advice that you have been waiting for.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Telling Everybody Everything. It is frankly amazing to me that I let myself go on camera looking this bad. I have not yet released a full video of any podcast, but I take video now and I put little clips online and shit me. I said to Bobby, kind of as a hint, I was like, do you know, I watch some of my friends' podcasts and they have studios and they have like hair and makeup and they go to a place and they do this podcast and they edit it and maybe I should put some makeup on. And he was like, no, he goes, I think part of your podcast's charm is that you don't. And he goes, and all my friends' wives listen to it and they don't watch it. They listen in the car. I'm like, all right, well, that's three Canadian women. So, I mean, my ratings must be skyrocketing. I'm always looking for like new initiatives to let people hear about this podcast. But I feel like, and he uses my podcast studio as a workout zone. Look at this. For those of you who are not seeing the clips, there are jars of piss in what is meant to be my podcast studio. Okay. And here I am giving you advice. Catherine. Oh, Joanne does a week in review. And I really love this at the beginning. My sister Joanne started curating the emails because we get hundreds and it's difficult for me to read them all and get back to them all and find time to feature problems on the podcast. And Joanne's the perfect person for that. And now she does these roundups of like a little blurb, her thoughts before. Catherine, lots of experts have written in reminding people about third-party ticket sellers. The overall consensus is that it is a big nope. Oh no, this is in French. Bobby and Violet, strap in. Concernant tes efforts à renouveler ton français, tes abandonnés sont ravis du fait que tu veux mettre plus attention sur ton français. Ton français est pas mal bien, selon eux. Oh, so these people who listen who are French, they don't think it's so bad, my French. Ils apprécient aussi ton bel accent neutral accent. Un peu canadien avec une petite influence européenne. Bref, on a dit que BK et Violette devraient se faire foutre. I think that means Violet and Bobby can go fuck themselves. Ou bien se décaliser en français canadien. Or simply to fuck off. Yeah, I got it. Se décaliser. Oh, okay. So if you'd like to tell someone to fuck off in French, va te faire foutre. Se faire foutre. They can go fuck themselves. Or se décaliser. That's why I didn't know the word. My problem is I only speak French like a 12-year-old from 1995. That's when my French stopped. So I don't understand this slang. Fuck off. A history of your Franco background that you may not know. Joanne. Joanne's running her own. Who do you think you are? Oh, where does she get this shit? Our maternal grandmother and beyond were from Montreal. Once they married into the McCarthy clan and ended up in the Toronto area, where French was once outlawed. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, she knows it because she's a teacher. Okay. So French was outlawed in Toronto in the 20th century. There was a lack of education offered for what we now call a Franco-minoritaire, a Francophone person living in non-French-speaking region. Oh. Julie, my mom, and her brothers were part of what's called la génération perdue, the lost generation, as there was no system to properly learn French in the southerly regions of Ontario. You then had the chance to change that cultural trajectory when you started frequenting a francophone school. You don't speak shit French. You are a franco-minoritaire, and no one, French or otherwise, should be perpetuating an anxiété linguistique wherein you avoid speaking French only because you don't think it's perfect. For you to throw away this language would be such a slap in the face to your Irish ancestors who lost their native language due to colonialism and your Indigenous listeners who've had their own language erased. I love Joanne's so political. She's like, how dare you stop speaking French? It is a slap in the face to Indigenous people. Joanne, my entire life is a slap in the face to Indigenous people, let's be clear. They'd love to have as much of their language as you do of your French, and they are currently struggling with rediscovering their nearly eradicated languages without letting the anxieties of doing it perfectly stand in their way. Wow. Where's your podcast, Joanne? Mom has a podcast. I sort of still barely have a podcast. You should have a podcast. This is very passionate. All right. No, I don't have this. This is Joanne thinks I have some disease that I don't have. Oh, Jesus. All right. Joanne said, Catherine, this has been extremely redacted. Here's the first email. The title is, I was ready to end it when his parents were killed in an explosion. Since 2016, I've allowed myself to be an absolutely embarrassing on-again, off-again relationship. Whether I try to talk to him about not wanting a casual once-a-week hookup, he suddenly begs me to stay and promises something real. I was finally ready to end this foolishness when, in September 2022, his childhood home exploded with his parents inside. They did not survive the accident. He didn't just lose his parents, he lost every trace of them along with his childhood and his childhood. Trigger warning, Jen, dog. By the time he told me, he was already going across the country to his hometown and he's been there ever since. I knew I wanted to support him and be there in the capacity that was appropriate, and I noticed my feelings started to change. I was mindful about the fact that getting into a relationship again for the wrong reasons, i.e. pity, was not going to end well for either of us, so I held off saying anything. But the same de facto relationship ensued. I told him I could not keep only seeing him once a week. Something was going to have to change. But he wants to keep living our separate lives with complicated schedules an hour away from each other. Between the two of us, my situation is a lot less flexible because I work so much to put a roof over my head, whereas he has little more control over his. He comes from generational wealth and does not have to work to support himself. Yeah, but he has no roof over. It literally blew off. I can't believe you put the words roof over my head after what happened to his parents. And I'm not smiling. I mean, it's just like a literary, you know, irony in there. He's in graduate school. He works part-time, but he never seems to want to take anything off his plate to make room for me. He says he needs more time alone, which is fine, but he also expects me to continue to be loyal to him and to be okay with this status quo. Whenever I confront him, he reverts back to, you don't know what it's like. I would trade places with you in a heartbeat. And then claims that I lack sympathy and empathy, which my friends are dumbfounded by. It seems to me like he's not ready to be in a relationship and needs to see a mental health professional. Catherine, am I nuts? Am I dumb for wanting to be with this man? Am I being unreasonable, thinking he should have some idea of how he feels about me by now? Am I being unreasonable, considering the accident? Give it to me straight. His parents dying in an explosion, unless you are a suspect, has absolutely nothing to do with the future of your relationship with this man. People's parents die. That's what people's parents do. And it's very sad. And he's been through a trauma, but he was treating you like shit before his parents blew up. So it's very sad. But no, you can't be with this man. The way he treats you now is the way he will always treat you. He's not going to change. He's not going to go to therapy. He says it's going to be like this. It's going to be like that. You don't have to put up with low standards in a relationship because someone's parents are dead. That is completely irrelevant. You could be there as a supportive, understanding friend, or you could not even be there. Do you know? It's like, all right, this has happened. It's a tragedy, but you and I are not together. And I'm sorry about your parents, but we need to go our separate ways. And it sucks because I know you love him. And if, like me, you have any ounce of a rescue syndrome, now you're like, well, I can be the one to like make it all better for him, this poor man. Or maybe it's his generational wealth. Generational wealth, you say? Parents died in an explosion, I hear. Is he a suspect? I don't know, because who stands to benefit from their demise? Him. I don't like this guy. I don't want to accuse him of anything, but I don't like how he's treating you. It is never going to change. They never, ever, ever change. And you've done all that you can do. This parental tragedy, this loss is like a bump in the road. You came back to him. You were nice to him. You're like, oh, sorry, your parents are dead. But he's still treating you the same as before. And you gotta gracefully bow out. I'm sorry. That's me giving it to you straight. This is never going to work. One part of it I especially hated. You don't know what it's like. I'd trade places with you in a heartbeat. It's like, do you know what? This victimhood, it seems like he's going to apply it to all situations in life. Do you want to have kids with a man like that? Do you want to be 70 years old with a man like that who just drags you into his like, well, there's no time. You need to be with someone who prioritizes you, regardless of all the realities in his life. You know, we've all been through something. We've all had some kind of tragedy. And no, this is not enough. Okay, Catherine, when ghosting crosses over into friendships. Catherine, the person I consider to be my best friend has been ghosting me for 2 months. Nothing happened. If you ask her, she replies, that's the way I am. But I do feel extremely hurt. I wrote to her on social media. I tried to call her. I texted her that she's putting our friendship on the line by not contacting me and that this is no way to show love and respect to someone who's always been there. And what does she do? She actively ignores me. I know this because she keeps posting stories on Instagram while she ignores me. I'm losing my mind. It seems like she really does it on purpose. She'll probably show up in a few weeks with a text like, sorry, honey, I don't remember to reply always, or some bullshit like that. That's what she always does, and I always forgive her because it pains me too much to lose her as a friend. What should I do? I can't think of ending this 10-year friendship that I consider sacred in my life, although I seem to be the only one who thinks it is, but I can't continue to be treated like a doormat. Well, you can't continue to be treated like a doormat. You said it yourself. Read it back. Different people have different expectations of relationships, whether it's a romantic relationship, a parental relationship, a friendship. What's the word for non-sexual? I forget. I'm losing my actual mind. You know what I mean. There's a word for it. I'm not going to think of it here today. I'm going to edit this out of the podcast. No. A platonic friendship. Boom! Got there with my slow hamster wheel brain in the end. It's the fumes of piss in this podcast. Anyhow, a platonic friendship. She might be the kind of person who doesn't put the effort into sacred friendships that you do. And I am that kind of person. I can't have a sacred friendship. My friends are like in and out of touch with me very casually, and I'm in and out of touch with them very casually. And there are certain people who would not tolerate that, but I keep the kind of friends who are kind of like me and they understand. I have some friends who are better friends than others. I'll give you an example, Ashling B. She's busy as hell, but she prioritizes her friendship. She had a big birthday party that I was not around for, and she had like all these friends and they were dancing, and you can see that she's got friends from Ireland, she's got school friends, she's got theater friends, she's got stand-up friends, she's got TV friends, and she cherishes those friendships. And if something is wrong, you need a pick-me-up, you want to have a cup of tea, I believe that Ashling, as busy as she is, will be there in a heartbeat. She tolerates the way that I am and the way that some of our other friends are, where we're like busy with our own shit and we dip in and out. And I don't feel like she's hurt by that because she has so many friends. But our styles are definitely different. And if I was her best friend, she would be hurt by my friendship style. So I would say you need to either accept that she's not purposely treating you like a doormat, this friend, but she is someone who is not going to be reliable to give you the kind of contact that you require from a relationship. So you need to surround yourself with more friends because you're a good friend. You're like the trademark type of friend that we all want. Like you're in touch and you use words to describe this friendship, like meaningful and sacred, and you're feeling extremely hurt. I'm sure she doesn't want to hurt you, but as we get older, it is a shame. Like, we don't prioritize our female friendships generally. Some of us do. So you need to get some friends from work, get in a hobby, get something so that you are surrounding yourself with more people. And even if those people are busy or they're out of touch, you'll have lots of little like snacks of friendship from everyone. And then you'll have, you know, and when she comes to you with a problem the next time, you can say to her in a nice way that's non-confrontational, you can go, look, I don't think you're hurting my feelings on purpose, but what you give in this friendship is not balanced by what I give in this friendship. And sometimes it hurts my feelings and it makes me feel like you don't want to be my friend, but maybe our styles are just different. And that will leave space for her. I'm sure she'll be like, yeah, the way that you friendship is intense for me and I need to be able to dip in and out, but I don't love you any less and I would like to remain friends. I think that's what's going on. I think it's a style thing. And you guys can be really clear about what you expect from each other and prop yourself up with other gal pals. Catherine, how to get the grandparents to respect social media boundaries? Yeah, good luck. My mother-in-law, no, why can't I say stepmother? My stepmother, my stepmom, Cher Bear, She takes pictures of the kids when she's here. And then I see those on Facebook and I'm fine with it. Now I'm like, I post pictures of the kids now. But part of me is like, and I don't get to approve the photos before they go up. Now, she is a photographer and I don't mind it. I really don't. But with Violet, I did mind it. And I don't know what I said or if I said anything at all, but I was a bit, it sort of tightened my chest a little and I didn't like that. And I can see that it's a huge issue for people. Grandparents feel very entitled to their grandkids and they want to post, and they're boomers as well. So maybe like they're posting pics in the bath or something that you don't want. Let's see. Enough about me. Catherine, I have a bunch of small British children. I am an expat Canadian living in the UK just like you. I'm returning home this summer to Ontario for the first time in years to visit family, and I'm already anxious about having to have a tough conversation with my mother, who is Facebook obsessed. She can't wait to share pictures of her time with grandkids on her newsfeed. I understand the huge flex for 70-year-olds to showcase their grandkids. I know she does it for the likes and comments on Facebook. She wants to impress her friends, but I'm really uncomfortable about it. I know she posts in lots of local groups that are open too, and I just want her to put her phone down and spend time enjoying her grandkids' company. I want to keep my kids' privacy safe. When I approach this to her, I know she will take it personally and get offended. Any advice on how to fight my case? Oh no. I don't want your mom posting photos of your kids on Facebook. It's pissing me off. And yeah, like they don't get it. They're like, well, and I hate to say, but maybe your mom doesn't have much else to post on Facebook. Do you know what I mean? Every once in a while, she's like, immigrants, and that's it. And then she'll be like, oh, Susan is checked in at the steakhouse again. You know, like she's bored. And maybe, you know, maybe she's dissatisfied with, you know, what she has to post about until your kids come. And then, yeah, of course, she's proud of them and she wants to show off, and she probably wants to show you off too. I would say, Mom, I know how much you want to share photos of your time with your grandkids, how proud you are of them, and I love that about you. They're so lucky to have you as a grandma. However, I would like to approve anything that you post because I don't just want pictures of my kids on the internet. And if you could consider that and give me approval over what you post, I'd really appreciate it because I know that you love to post, but my generation talks a lot about the safety of the internet and you don't fully get like that these photos can go anywhere. And also, even if it's not about photos going everywhere, it's like, I don't want strangers looking at my kids for you to flex on. So maybe just be like, please, can I have approval at the end of the week? Yeah, like we're visiting for a month or a week, and then at the end, please, can you just show me what you want to post and I'll tell you. And then choose like 3 pics and be done with it. It's a hard one because, yeah, you don't want to offend your mother. I'm so lucky that like I can't offend my mother. I just tell her exactly what I think. And maybe she is offended. On her podcast, sometimes she seems offended. But it's like, I don't worry about that. I think I articulate myself as honestly and as fully and as clearly as I can. And I think the people in my life, luckily, are cool enough to understand that I'm not trying to attack them. I'm just like, I don't want certain pictures of my kids on. And like, if you act like it's not a big deal, but it's just something that you don't want, maybe she'll take it. Like, it's not a huge criticism. Just give me first right of refusal. Ooh, Catherine, herpes. This email is just called herpes. I found out 9 months ago that I have herpes. I'm a gay male in my early 20s. I haven't dated much at all. No long-term relationships, a few short ones. However, my romantic life really came to a standstill when I found this out. Very recently, I've been seeing a guy and I told him about the herpes, which he took well, but all of a sudden he's very distant since. I don't know if it's because of the herpes, but I do suspect it. I know I'm not alone in this, but I've been feeling kind of hopeless these past several months. I don't have a primary care physician and I have very frequent outbursts due to stress. Stick a little pin in that. Which I just have to wait out. Do you or any of your listeners have any advice on dating with herpes? I'm finally ready to put myself out there emotionally, but I'm struggling to find out how to deal with this new obstacle. Okay, so your first language is not English. I can see by the next sentence. I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to invade your privacy. But you have said here you have very frequent outbursts due to stress. Do you mean you have very frequent outbreaks of herpes due to stress? Because I was going to say, herpes is a virus. It's a, you know, it is an immune response. So when you're stressed, you'll have more herpes. Yes. Okay. So try to de-stress. That's number one. And number two is there's amazing medicine for herpes now. I don't have herpes, but people in my life do have herpes, people that I know. And they controversially, like this one guy I know who had herpes, he didn't tell people all the time. And he knew that he wasn't contagious unless he had an active outbreak. That might not be 100%. You might just be less contagious. And I'm not giving you the advice that you should just bang everyone and never tell them. I feel like, personally, I know that if I had a contagious virus, I would tell someone. Always, I would. But then I don't have a lot of sex. I'm not a gay man in my early 20s, and I never have been. But I would feel very encouraged that the people I know with herpes, one of them, she had one outbreak when she found out, and then it never, ever came back again. And the other person I know with herpes, I don't know if it ever came back, but it's just not an issue. Like, they take their medicine, they're mindful of it, they practice a lot of mindfulness so that they stay very low stress. And I'll tell you, with lupus or whatever it is I have, I find that it was a blessing. I'm not sad that I have lupus. I really am not, because it's one of the things in my life that have taught me very clearly, very early on in my 20s, oh, you can't be stressed or you'll be sick. And that's true of everyone, but they might not realize they're sick right away. They might be stressed for a while and the sickness kind of creeps in. But when you have a virus like herpes or an autoimmune disease like lupus, you just learn like, oh no, you're going to get super sick right away. So you better calm down. And I'm the most low anxiety person probably on the planet. And I owe some of that to lupus. So maybe herpes will be your ticket to peace and serenity, because you don't have a choice now. You just have to keep that immune response cool. Eat well, sleep as much as you can. Don't be out all night in the clubs doing poppers, please. Just look after yourself and take your medicine, and you'll see that it's a really scary diagnosis, but it'll be fine. I have HPV, I do have that, and it's never come back. You can't see it, but like the doctor can see it. And I've been for my usual, I go more than most people because I go privately, but you need a primary care physician as well. Talk this over with them and they'll let you know that it can be totally managed. Don't worry about it. Certainly don't let it make you feel bad about yourself or think that your hope of having children or like a meaningful relationship is dashed because of herpes. Absolutely not. So many happy people have herpes. So many famous happy people have herpes. Mm-hmm. I could tell you a few, but I'm not allowed. Oh no. Short men getting passed over. Oh, I need your help with my short king era. I'm a 28 short king era. I'm a 28-year-old female. I'm tall and curvy. I am 5'11". I come from a tall family of 6-footers. I love this woman. Being tall has always been part of my identity. I've grown from hating it as a child to embracing it in adulthood. Yes, Naomi Campbell, you have. Being tall is amazing. And I think that you're evolutionarily like a really good candidate for lots of things. I think men find it sexy because, you know, from a very like Neanderthal standpoint, you're going to give them big athletic children. And also your pregnancies will be easier because you're big. Look at Kim Kardashian, how difficult her pregnancies were. Part of that is because she's the size of a baby herself. So being tall, oh, I love it for you. I love that you're happy about it. However, it's never been something I look for in men, tallness. Most of my exes have been a similar height to me or a little taller. However, my current boyfriend is considerably shorter. I knew him as a friend before we started dating, and he made it clear he had feelings for me. He's handsome and funny and incredibly emotionally mature, and we have great communication. There really isn't anything wrong after a year of dating, except just this one thing. In general, I'm fine with our height difference and it doesn't cross my mind. But occasionally he will go to put his arm around me and it doesn't reach. Or I notice his feet are half my size, or he has to get up on tiptoes to kiss me. Small things that I shouldn't care about. He loves my height and jokes about short kings. He's very secure. I don't want to upset him. I see celebrities like Nick Jonas and Sophie Turner changing the stigma around height differences in couples. So should I give it more time to get used to? Am I being shallow and vain? Am I missing out on the perfect man because of a few physical icks? Could I ever tell him the real reason if we broke up over this height discrepancy? No. No. There's no way out of this. You're gonna have to fake your own death. Well, I hate that you're getting icks. I don't think that you should have to pass over icks. Ick is a very natural protection response. When I was doing this live, Dear Dolly Live with Dolly Alderton last night, we were speaking to the audience all about mostly love dilemmas. People write to me mostly about sex and love and relationships, and the same is true for Dolly. And they spoke about your life partner. Like, how do you know it's the one? Do you know right away it's the one? How do you know? And Dolly said that she'd received advice from someone else that said, knowing is the absence of fear. And I loved hearing that. That's something everyone could really put in their back pocket and be like, aha, I'll know it's the one when there's the absence of fear. And I feel that very much with Bobby. I feel at peace with him. I was sort of afraid on the surface at first, but ultimately I wasn't. I just like very peacefully got married to him after only a few months. I'd never even considered marrying anyone else. I'd never had the ick. He pisses me off sometimes now, but I don't get the ick whatsoever. The ick is a specific warning bell. It's the gift to let you know that this relationship, you know, after 1 year, you shouldn't be getting the ick about anything. But in your case, you have a lot of societal damage that could be giving you this ick. It might not be him at all. You've said that he's incredibly funny. There are no real problems after a year. He's wonderful. He's good to you and everything else. He is very secure, which is so important. You wouldn't want to be with someone who was all like hyped up on you being taller. You need to, I think, explore where this ick comes from. Is it because still in society there is this stigma, even though you embrace your height and he seems cool with it? Is some of that messaging creeping in and making you feel like, he can hardly put his arm around you. He has to get up on his toes. Or do you want some like big muscle man to sweep you off your feet? And if you do, as toxic as that ideology may be, it is authentic to you and you shouldn't have to compromise for any less than what you want. Because if you do, if you ignore what is, this may not be, but if you ignore what is a very real ick, then where's this man going to be in 20 years' time? You're both going to be unhappy. The ick will grow. You'll divorce him or whatever. And then he'll be short and older. Do you know? So if the ick is real, and that's something only you can find out for yourself, you need to find out soon and let him know in whatever way you decide to break up with him that you are releasing him to find the person who will not get the ick from him. In my close circle of friends, I do know a very tall woman who is married with children to a very much shorter man. So much so that there's a very clear difference in photos and everything else. Very clear. And she doesn't mind at all. She loves him. She adores him. He's very secure in himself. They have a very happy family. I don't think she gets the ick or ever got the ick about it at all whatsoever. I can't ask her. I don't think she's the type of person who would like to come on the podcast. But I'll do some research. Hang on. I'll get straight back to you. Hey, anonymously for my podcast, ... has your sister ever had the ick about her husband because he's short? ? Has she ever talked to you about that? ? If so, how did she get past it? How long did it last? A reply immediately. You can always count on her for that. All right. So she says, I don't think it ever even occurred to my sister that height was an issue, as she's always been tall. Also, he is hilarious. So if guys are funny, that kind of trumps everything. If he was short and a dud, life would be hard. So yeah, she's happy, but it sounds to me like she never had the ick. If she did, she didn't tell her sister, and you always tell your sister when you have the ick. I would say across the board, never ignore the ick. If I learned anything from Dear Dolly Live, it is that the perfect relationship for you will have the standout feature, the absence of fear. Ick is not necessarily fear, but there should be almost no major question in your mind. You should just be like, of course, this is who I'm going to be with. Of course. So don't ignore the ick. Explore that ick, even if you feel like it's politically incorrect ick. Thank you very much for listening. It's so great to have you here. If you think I should be doing anything different on the podcast, something I'm not covering, please write me that in an email, tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. If you have any questions, please send those to tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. Any comments or any advice for any other listeners or any reactions to the stuff that we talk about on the podcast, I would love to hear from you, and definitely so would Joanne. This is her best job ever. Thank you. I hope you're well. Keep looking after each other. And we'll see you next week.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.